Welcome to the Inspiration 316 show hosted by John Beener, founder of Wise Counsel. John shares the inspiring and shocking miracles of how Jesus Christ is changing lives, families, organizations, and nations in this chaotic world. These are the true stories the media won't cover because they defy the shocking bad news they are selling. Stay tuned to be inspired.
Well, good day. It's John Beener with Inspiration 316. We're excited to have you join us here today. We're talking about marriage wisdom. Hey, if you were looking for the bad news, who shot who and who protested who and who wants to take what down and put something else up, whatever it may be. God's got a plan to work through us if we just try to get on track with him. Get on him. It's going to be a lot easier instead of all the chaos in the world. And what the media wants to share with you most of the time is garbage. They are garbage collectors. I'm sorry. We want to share the good news with you. God's in the turnaround business. He's changing lives. Jesus Christ died on the cross for your sins, my mistakes, and all kinds of grace is available to us and all around us. We wouldn't be where we are without grace. We'd be still in the desert somewhere. All right, today, marriage wisdom. We got Les and Leslie Parrott. Yes, their first name is the same. Can you believe it? But they've written many books on marriage. This first little interview is the core of a good fight. You want to hear this one. And then they got a segment called Love Talk on another interview. Then we've got a couple of couples on the show, too. One couple where he came back from Afghanistan with PTSD and his wife just couldn't take it, you know, because he's moody and all over the place. Also, we've got another testimony of a marriage restored just about before he got divorced. And then we've got Emerson Edrich. This guy's phenomenal. He wrote a book called Love and Respect. It's one of the best books I've ever read or seen about marriage. It helps men and women understand the differences between themselves and how to cope with them. So we have two segments on that. So it's a Rock and Sock'em show. It's going to be good and exciting. Get your antenna up. Get ready to listen here. We're going to start off here with Les and Leslie Parrott. Talk about the core of a good fight in a good marriage. Listen in.
What makes up a good fight? Like we said,
what's at the heart of a good fight?
We said last time, yeah, that there's dumb fights and there's good fights. Mm-hmm. Well, what is a good fight? And we came to this thing that we now call the core of mm-hmm. a good fight. It's four things.
Right, which is easy to remember even in the heat of emotions. You can go, okay, where am I at on
core.
The
core? C-O-R-E.
Right.
You got it.
All right.
And
the
so
core.
The first one, let's talk about each one of these. The first one is cooperation. Mm-hmm. Now, this
both
is...
Both of you want it together.
Yes.
Mutual. Go.
Yeah.
And
in spite the win-win.
Of, yes, a win-win. And in spite of your fight types in the book, mm-hmm. we have a chapter and we have a little assessment you can take to figure out mm-hmm. which of the four fight types you are.
And you can be a cooperator even if you're a competitor in your mm-hmm. style of mm-hmm. fighting.
Well, we're both competitors. She mm-hmm. might not admit it, but she's
but I think the difference
she's a win-win
is that we've
girl.
Decided we're not in competition with right. one another. We're on the same team.
We're
I
on
love
the same.
That.
When only
you
one
know?
Person wins in the relationship, that means there's a loser.
Right.
And that means you
That's
lose.
No good.
Both
yeah.
of you lose.
Yeah. We got to both win.
So cooperation is essential. And mm-hmm. so we drill down on that in the book and talk a little bit about how do you get to that cooperative
right.
spirit.
The O is for ownership. This is huge because some couples say, look, we're talking about an issue and it is not my fault. I'm not going to own this. But what we'll say to the couple is, well, here's what you can own. Even if it clearly seems to be your spouse's fault, you can own your reaction mm-hmm. to right. what happened because that's a part of the mix yeah. of the fight that
right.
unfolds.
And we sometimes call it owning your chaos pie. We think of when there's chaos, there's friction between
right.
us. There's this pie. How many slices are you willing to own and say, I contributed to this much chaos in this situation?
Mm-hmm.
And you remember that cell phone I told you about yesterday? We got a little app on there that you can literally drag your finger around and take the slices. And if you both do that, mm-hmm. it'll show you, okay, all right, we're both, one of us may not be wanting to own this, mm-hmm. or maybe one's owning too much, whatever. And that insight can get you to a place where you have that kind of cooperation,
and
right?
And when you're taking ownership of it instead of placing blame, that's right. when you start working toward resolve. And that's the point of the whole thing.
So cooperation, ownership. The R is for?
Respect.
Right.
And this has all to do with what you convey to the person you're in the fight with. You know, I'm not going to fight in a way that shows my pride and cuts you down. I'm going to fight right. in a way that shows what a grand person
and
you are.
Too often, we know this from research too, too often in a conflict, you try to kind of cut the other person down by belittling them and yeah. being sarcastic. Oh, way to go, Einstein. Regular genius, aren't you? You know?
And, or using even just the nonverbals.
Yeah, do you know what one of the most toxic things is that we do to our partner in a conflict? It's not even with uttering a word. It's just rolling the eyes. When we roll our eyes at our partner, and we've been in the laboratory, a scientific laboratory, when a person's hooked up to biofeedback equipment, their heart rate is being measured and their skin temperature and so forth. And when, especially, this is true, you'll like this, especially when a woman does that to a man, the man looks like a feather fell on his head. He didn't even notice it. Inside, he's going bananas.
Yeah, because he wasn't respected.
Be respected.
Exactly.
That's
right.
I think men, when we feel dissed, and I've told Betty, I feel dissed, you're disrespecting me. And that really, boy, it makes me mad. And
right.
if it's the only thing I'll say, Betty, this really makes me angry. Right. It makes me angry. I don't like it. And I'll go ahead and express it. It makes them do what I said, right? Mm-hmm. And we don't like to be dissed. Men want to be respected. There's
that's
something about that honor.
Absolutely.
Is that an appropriate thing that a man feels like he should be respected?
Yeah, well,
I know
goes,
we need to earn it. We need to deserve it. We need to be worthy of it. But there's something inside us
that we want
that.
Into you.
We feel like we really need to be respected.
Yeah. And you can't have a good fight without it.
Right.
And it goes both ways. She needs to be respected. Respected as well. And so, but that is essential. That is one of the four ingredients that you've got to have to fight a good fight.
I'm point blank determined to respect her. I really am. And I want it back. And,
right.
And that's why if she, I don't think she'd ever mean it, but if it comes across like it, and I just say, I feel like you're dissing me, right? I'll say that. And she'll reflect on it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She might diss me one more time or two to make a point. but the point is that's big to us.
Right.
What's the last?
Well, and by the way, one of the best ways to do that is just simply to listen to each other. It's not like, wow, what do I do to respect you? It's very easy to respect a person.
No.
It's to hear them.
And we do that.
Yeah. All right. And then here's the last one. And I got to tell you, this is my favorite one, and I'll tell you why, but it's empathy.
Right.
C-O-R-E, E is for empathy. That capacity to put yourself in your partner's shoes and see the world from their perspective, to accurately see it. Now, why is this important? We know from research, 9 times out of 10, this is 90% of the time, if you did nothing else to resolve conflict, we know that your conflict would dissipate solely because your partner feels that level of deep understanding.
That you identified with them.
Right.
You know, and this doesn't mean you set aside your perspective. It's a temporary choice. I know what I think happened. I'm going to set this aside and enter your
And empathy
side.
Changes you.
It
that's
does.
The other thing. It's not just about what it conveys to that person.
Yeah.
You begin to see the world differently.
Right.
It changes you. And that's why it's so risky.
Very good. That's Les and Leslie Parrott. They wrote a book, The Core of a Good Fight. They've written several books on marriage. We've got one coming up on Love Talk. They're very good. They're a good team. They work together well. They're both teachers. He teaches, I think, at Seattle Pacific University. She taught in elementary school. And then when they had kids, she obviously stayed home. But they can both talk. You can imagine what their fights are like, right? My wife and I, if I show her this and she said, here's how to handle a good fight. She said, I don't want to fight. And I'd say, yeah, I don't either. But I mean, it's a word that doesn't resonate with her. Well, he kept saying dis, meaning disrespected. He was shortening it. And Steve thought he meant pissed. And that's not what he meant. But he said it several times. But that's back to the whole book, and we're going to share that later on in this show. You don't want to miss it later on. Love and respect. Men want and need respect. Women want and need love. That's the difference between the two of us. The first choice men would take respect. First choice for women would be love. But I love what he talked about, empathy there. I mean, it's about being open to the other person's needs, you know, caring about them and being sensitive to that. Stop trying to be so one-sided to prideful and all. It's not all about you. It's about us together as a team. Well, let's get into the sex. So that's a good interview on the James Robson show on Life Today. That's a TV show. Here's another interview with them talking about Love Talk. This is on a different show, but listen in here. What they have to say.
Feeling right. in a conversation.
Reflecting feeling
right.
because a skilled communicator realize that there's a river of emotions that flows between two people when they're communicating. And if you're effective in your communication, it's almost like you're panning for gold. You sift through all the verbiage in that river to find a little golden nugget, right, of emotion, and hand it back to that person and go, hey, here, is this it? Is this how you feel? Yeah, that is. You're the first person all day that really understands what I'm going through, right? When you reflect somebody's feeling, it opens up their spirit.
Absolutely.
Like few other things can do.
Yeah, it's just that you get me feeling. You heard me, you know.
When was the last time somebody did that for you? When was the last time you did that for somebody else? Mm-hmm. You know, it's a rarity that we do it. And I can tell you this, by the way, just in the short time of being up here and looking out at this audience, I can tell you that some of you are going to be more effective at reflecting feelings than others of you. Do you know who you are? This is not a sexist thing. We know this from research. Women have a larger feeling vocabulary than men do.
Right.
Women, relative to men, are like a walking thesaurus of emotions. Okay? You ask most men, how are you feeling? What kind of response do you get? I'm fine, yeah. Not hungry, I'm okay, you know? So,
And by the way, that's why it's such good news when you can learn, men, that this can really work in a conversation even if you don't get the feeling exactly right. It still works.
Right, because I can be wrong. You'll help me if I'm wrong.
Absolutely.
I can say, boy, it sounds like you're feeling really sad about that.
You know, I don't think I'm sad. I kind of think I might be a little angry about this.
Right. So she's going to help me understand the emotion, and vice versa, as long as, and this is key, as long as you are, anybody know? Genuine. Right? You got to be genuine. Yeah. If you're just doing a technique or a strategy, forget about it. It's not going to work. But as long as your heart's in it and you really do want to understand that person.
Yeah, just because you get it wrong, it's not going to shut the person down that you're listening to. They're going to feel like you want to understand, and they're going to help you. They'll walk that extra mile.
By the way, how do you know when somebody's genuine? How do we know? Do they say, well, I'm really genuine now, so let's talk? I mean, how do you know? Right, we all have a little built-in radar detector for phoniness. Everybody in here can sense whether somebody's really there and present or not.
Right.
Because of the nonverbals. It's eye contact. Do you know that even your pupils dilate when you're genuinely interested in somebody else? Now, you don't go around and look in people's eyes and say, okay, right? But you pick that kind of thing up. You know, right? In fact, let's kind of demonstrate this here for a moment. I will clarify content, reflect feelings. You talk about anything in the world you want to talk about, and just follow along while I do these two things.
Okay, well, as a mom right now, I'm thinking about John, because he just graduated from sixth grade. So this is like a huge milestone. He's moving from grade school into junior high.
Right.
And I just have a total mixed feelings about it. You know, and I still
there's
see
some anxiety in it, I'm guessing.
A little anxious, a little excited, but, you know, he still likes to play with his Legos and run around with Nerf guns, whatever, and I just hope he's ready for junior high and,
Right. So there's a sense of wanting to make sure you're prepared.
There's
and
a sense
and he's ready.
Of that.
And a lot of feelings behind it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Kind of done.
So what's wrong with this picture? Some of you guys are like, nothing, that was good, man. Way to go. Getting a lot done up there, man. That's great. Well, I'm not fully present, right?
No.
I may be doing the technique. I may be clarifying.
It doesn't matter that you could identify the feeling. It had no effect.
Right. Yeah. So the point is you have to be genuine. Your heart has to be in it. You have to be present with that person for this to work, and certainly not looking at this thing. By the way, did you see the thing on Saturday Night Live where they had a device where you could actually text and it would project it onto the person's forehead so you could just look at them? And, you know, pretty good idea.
So bad.
But you got to be fully present.
Yeah.
Clarify content, reflect feeling from a genuine heart.
Very fundamental to what it takes to have a great conversation.
The basis for filling your conversations with grace is a real practical thing that you can do. Couples, this is communication. But there's more than that when it comes to the fundamentals.
Yeah, one of the most important things that we have to get in the midst of our conversations is to understand that we really do have differences when it comes to a great conversation.
Yeah, in fact, write this down. You've never heard this before. Men and women are different. Men and women are different, right? And this is so important, really, to kind of underscore those differences in communication, because if you don't get them, you're really derailed.
No. In fact, here's the absolute truth. Men and women do not even share the same goal for what it looks like to have a great conversation.
Right. We have very different goals. In fact, let me ask the women here. Women, what is the number one goal that men have in conversation? I just want women to answer. What is it, women? To get to the point? To finish the conversation, I'm hearing? Anything else?
Fix
the problem?
Sure.
Hey, you don't have sex. Thank you. Good night. It's what researchers call, Deborah Tannen and her research calls report talk. In other words, men like the report. We like to be in the know. Men like to have the report, you know. It's just that we don't need all the fluff, you know. We don't need all the bunny trails. Don't need all the stories. Just the report, you know. In fact, literally, I will sometimes come home at the end of the day and say to Leslie, hey, give me the report. You know, bring me up to speed. Tell me about the boys. What do I need to know to function in this home tonight? What is the report?
Right. Generally, the first item on the report is what's for dinner
is always a good place to start.
But it's all about information. You want to get the information, you know, so you're in the know. Totally different goal for us. In fact, men, let me ask you, what do you think women have as their number one goal for a great conversation? Is there not a man in here?
They're scared.
Brave enough to speak. We're scared, he says.
I'm not answering that question. No way. I know it's not sex, I can tell you that.
When it comes to a great conversation for women, it's not report talk, it's rapport talk. That's what researchers call it. Because for a woman, a conversation is all about building relationship, building rapport with the person we're talking to. I mean, the very purpose of a conversation is relational. It's to build a connection and a bond with whoever we're talking with. I mean, we just see it as a window of opportunity to make that emotional connection. We love all the fluff. We love all the bunny trails because more chance to connect, you know? That's the kind of stuff that makes us feel close to the person we're talking to.
I love that statement. Love the bunny trails. I don't think I heard that expression before, but, you know, love the detail to me. That's what my wife gives me, more detail. And then when I do say something that tries to jump ahead and shorten up what she's telling me, it's, John, now wait a minute, I haven't finished yet, kind of thing. All right. But anyway, they're outstanding. They are fluid as a couple. They work well, obviously, together. Feedback is what we both need and want from each other, obviously. Men want it abbreviated. Women want it more extended, because I love what she talked about. It's about building the relationship. That's their thrill, is in the conversation more than probably anything else. I mean, not that some women aren't, you know, slow talkers and that kind of stuff, but they have deep inner feelings, just like men have deep inner feelings, but in a different way than a woman does. This story here that we have is about a man and a woman, a very cute couple. Unfortunately, he's in the military, and so he goes to Afghanistan. I think it is 2 or 3 tours of duty. That's tough, but comes back with PTSD, post-traumatic syndrome disorder. That's the technical term for mental health people out there. But anyway, it's about infidelity and separation. You know, are we getting divorced and the plan to get divorced, and a doomed marriage, they describe. But God enters in, and they find purpose, and they find finally love that she's wanting and he's wanting too. But you know, the problem we have as men is that we want to accomplish things, and that's what we're created to do, accomplish things. Women want relationships. They have this deep inner feeling. They need to express it, and they need to have good feedback, loving, sensitivity, caring about them, too, to have overcome some of these obstacles. Listen, this is tough, this PTSD syndrome stuff. It's deep emotional stuff.
I met my first year in the Marine Corps, and we got married a year later.
We decided we were going to have kids pretty quick, so we had 3 children back to back.
I did a lot of deployments overseas, and I'd be gone for a couple of months, and then I'd be home for a couple of months, and I'd be gone again.
I felt really alone, just really depressed, and I thought all I was mom. 9/11 happened. He came home and said that he wanted to be able to help fight this war on terror.
believed in my job in Afghanistan, and I believed that it was the most important thing in the world, and I was privileged to get to do it.
I knew how to take care of my home. I knew how to take care of my family. But one thing I didn't know how to do was really support my husband with the struggles he was dealing with.
Coming home from Afghanistan was the hard part because I just felt like things made sense there. And when I came home, I'm going into my wife's world where I'm impeding on her system of being a mom. I felt like I was in the way.
He just kept himself distant. I just really never could feel a connection. And so just like in every marriage, that you know, you start becoming distant from each other and you're feeling unsatisfied. I didn't have joy with my marriage.
So I was diagnosed with PTSD. I felt the physical symptoms of my face going numb, arms going numb, and I just felt in this state of just complete desperation.
We don't really understand the struggles of post-traumatic stress, and so I didn't know how to recognize that in him. The first month or two, I was able to comfort him through it, but it wasn't long before the anger would start.
I didn't really know what to do, but I had done martial arts my whole life. I'd wrestled and done jiu-jitsu, and I'd already fought as a professional fighter. So my counselor and my wife recommended that I go try to do that. I felt like I had found the cure because while I was wrestling on those mats, I couldn't think about the things that were giving me anxiety. I would spend like 10, 12 hours a day wrestling on the mats and training. And then Kathy encouraged me to open a school. So I started fighting professionally again and teaching.
He put everything he had into that, like everything else, but I watched him do all these things. And never did he put that effort into our marriage. And I craved that. I longed for that. And now here we are, 10 years into our marriage, and it's still not happening. And once his fame came with having that gym and having the professional fights, women came into his life.
I surrounded myself with a bunch of people that just told me everything I wanted to hear, and no one that was telling me the things I needed to hear. My anger was out of control. My home was like, it's not a home. It was not a happy place to be. My children were scared of me. My wife was scared of me.
And I pretty much came to a point where I said, choose our family or enough is enough. He chose the direction he was going, and so we separated and we sold our home, and my children experienced the pain that came with a broken home.
It was probably the hardest thing I ever did was sitting my kids down and trying to explain to them how this was going to be better, and it wasn't. And I became very depressed and suicidal and really struggled with taking my own life.
I was so broken, I was so hurt that I didn't know what to do. I had a relationship with the Lord. I loved the Lord. I knew the Lord. But I never truly got on my knees to surrender to the Lord. My kids would see me just lay in the bed crying all the time. I couldn't function. And so I opened the book called Power of a Praying Wife by Stormy R. Martin. And I began praying for my husband. And the Lord began to show me my faults in the marriage. Then that turned into, God, allow me to see Chad the way you see Chad, and help me to love him the way you love him. And the most important thing was, help me to forgive him the way you forgave him, because I can't live a life like this for the rest of my life.
And then one day, when the divorce papers were all filed and signed and ready to execute, Kathy came to me.
I say to him, everything that you do, you accomplish, you achieve, you rise above and beyond. But when it comes to our family, you quit.
It just really convicted me. I mean, she was just absolutely right. And I made a decision right at that moment that I had caused the damage, I was going to fix it. And I began to renew my relationship with God on a level that was I had never experienced before. That's when the real restoration came.
It was almost harder taking my husband back and working through restoration than it was actually going through it and being hurt. But I was to a place that I was able to bring it to the cross every morning, and I was ready to move forward.
Wow, what a story that is. Is that powerful or not? I said it before we started on that show, on that little clip there. Men worship accomplishment. Women worship relationships and love. Men Want Respect. We talked about that a little bit earlier. We're going to talk about that more here in the second half of the show. But this is the problem. Men want to give up. You know, they'll find another outlet or another place to feel fulfillment, you know, when they don't feel fulfillment at home with their wife. And so he talked about suicide. Hey, everybody who's ever been in war probably has thought about suicide at one point in time. But The Power of a Praying Wife, that's a powerful book. I'm trying to remember the lady's name. She mentioned it, that wrote that book. We've had her on the show a couple of times as well. But outstanding woman that really it does an excellent teaching all about that. It's really about being willing to change. It's about being open to each other. It's God has a purpose between a man and a woman. It's like we're two pieces of puzzle, and they do actually fit together, but you have to keep turning them and working at it to get it to come together, you know, because it's, again, understand the spouse and where they're coming from, and so then you can start to be empathetic and start to be open and be teachable. And most important of all is surrender to God. God can work miracles. He can make adjustments to that puzzle. He can make that puzzle fit together. Phenomenal testimonies and stories about that. We talk about it on the show all the time. God's in the business of changing people, changing marriages, changing circumstances. He's drawing us into his purpose, his needs, his wants for us. He knows the gifts and talents and skills that he's given us to be the best parent, the best husband or wife. God is in that business of changing. That's where back to prayer one. All right, this is Philip Phillips. If you remembered that show years ago that he won contest, I can't remember it right now, but anyway, here's Coming Home. We've got to take a break. Be back shortly here.
And although this wave is stringing us along, just know you're not alone, because I'm going to make this place yours.
We have a multi-vehicle crash, 95 South, that's beyond Bay Meadows. Another one on 295 North, the ramp from Beach Boulevard. We have congestion, 95 to South ramp to Forest Street. Traffic's backed up to 8th Street there. 295 North from Butler to Beach Boulevard, slow going there. 295 North from 95 to before the Buckman is slow. Partly cloudy skies over the weekend with a slight rain chance, 75 tonight, 86 tomorrow, 88 Sunday and Monday.
As we roll down this unfamiliar road, and although this wave is stringing us along, just know you're not alone, 'cause I'm gonna make this place yours.
That is Philip Phillips. He met One American Idol a few years ago. The song's called Home. It's a good song. Very Christian songs. You get into the words deeper anyway. We're talking today about marriage wisdom. This is John Beender with Inspiration 316. It's all about men and women finding compatibility, finding love, and finding respect, and finding enjoyment with each other. We are thankful for Dick Erickson at Sun Tire 11 Stores and his support of our show. Here's a little testimony with Dick and his wife coming together and a marriage encounter and how it was a life changer for both of them.
Well, they got this thing that came up called marriage encounter. And I still was living my life, and I knew the Lord. I sure did. He was knocking, but he wasn't in there. I would not open that door. So I went to marriage encounter. But let me tell you, it didn't happen that easy. This happened probably 6 months or so. Every time it'd come up, she'd say, come on, Dick, let's sign up for this. I said, come on, I didn't watch those people. They're all standing around holding hands over there, you know, kind of gooey stuff. I mean, you know, they're not supposed to do this, and hugging on each other. So finally she said, one more, you know, and how we really got to keep after it. We got to keep after. We don't know sometimes whether we're these straws are, you know, this is breaking straws. We're getting things done. Fine, I said, I'll go. And I'd already found out you couldn't take any drinks or you know. I said, but here's the condition. I'm bringing a bottle of wine. She said, I don't care what you bring. I thought she'd say, well, you can't do that, you know, and I'd be out of this thing. I said, well, I'm bringing a big bottle of wine. It was one of those little quarts. This was a half gallon. So we went. And sure enough, just what I thought, Friday night we get out there and, you know, about half the couples are sitting there with their arms around there. And I'm not really, I mean, I've made some significant changes. The Lord has changed me a lot of ways, and I've gotten better about that. But you know, I'm thinking, I knew this was going to happen. They're all going to be holding hands and hugging on each other, and they're going to be up to some speaking. And sure enough, so by midnight Friday, I was a little closer to her, you know. And Saturday, boy, they're up and they're at it and going. And pretty soon, I think by noon, I probably had my arm around her. I had never been involved in so much love in my life. I would take on anyone in this room, anytime, any place prior to that point in my life. So physically, you couldn't scare me. I didn't care how big you were. So you whipped me. I figured out a way to get back up somehow. So every time I'd take on an issue, it was that tough-mindedness, the disciplined Marine Corps sort of stuff. Well, the Lord doesn't work that way. I mean, he can. We all know that. He can do anything he wants. He worked on Dick Erickson through love. Over, and that by Saturday night, I was putty. I mean, I had cried for at least an hour by that point. I mean, I started thinking of what's going on in my life, the pain in a fanny I'd been to my bride. And so the priest says, and you've got to come through this next issue with me, especially for the non-Catholics. He said, it was a Catholic event, and he said, you know, something we do on Saturday night, it's up to you folks, but we do have confessions if you want, and you want to relieve yourself of any thoughts and things going on in your life. Well, I thought, I hope he's got a lot of time. So, I go to a confession. And what they do, they come up to your room. It was a motel. And your spouse steps out in the hallway, and you have your time and share with the priest what's been going on in your life that shouldn't have been going on, how you've hurt the Lord. And so when I finished, he said, Dick, he said, I'd like you to step in the bathroom and get on your knees and start thinking through all the blessings the Lord has given you in your life. Okay. Now, I at that point felt great. I'd gotten a lot of stuff off my chest, thought about it, and people talk about that issue of confession. But the point is to the Lord, was to take the time and in detail talk about the things that I felt guilty about. And I did that and shared that and felt remorse for that, asked for forgiveness for that. But went into that bathroom and got on my knees and started thinking of all the many, many blessings getting me through high school, getting me through Vietnam, finding a bride such as that I have. And in about 3 minutes, I broke down and I couldn't quit crying. And I moved over to his side at that moment in my life. And that was some people talk about, but in my life, that was a step. I walked out of my world into his world.
That's a great testimony, isn't it? God will change you from the inside out. That's what it's all about. We're talking about marriage wisdom today, and we're featuring little interviews and outtakes and stories. Here is Emerson Egritz. He's talking about love and respect in marriage as well as in family with Randy Robinson. It's a Life Today show on TV, but it's an interview, and he gives a lot of good background. Listen in. This is insightful stuff.
Well, I pastored for many years in East Lansing, Michigan, college town, and studied the Bible 30 hours a week for nearly 20 years as part of that teaching ministry. Also had my PhD in family studies, And years back, 1998, actually, I saw something in Scripture that I had not been paying attention to in the area of marriage. Ephesians 5:33, a husband is to love his wife, and a wife is to respect her husband. And that second part of the verse, I realized we hadn't been paying attention to. And, of course, women want to go gag me on respecting my husband. I say, I don't feel any respect for him. He's not superior to me. I'm not inferior to him. He hasn't earned it. He doesn't deserve it. You want us to return to male dominance and patriarchy. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to give him license to do what he wants to do. I'm not going to lose a sense of myself. I'm not going to return the feminists back 50 years. I'm not going to be treated like a doormat, subject myself to emotional abuse. But other than these things, Dr. Emerson, I'm really open to hearing what you have to say about this. And so you and I serve and die for honor. We give our very lives for our buddies for honor, and yet the disconnect between what women felt about honoring a man and what you and I feel about how we honor each other was light years apart. And as I got into this, the University of Washington studied 2,000 couples for 20 years, and they said, we now know the two key ingredients for successful marriages, love and respect. Well, the Bible said that 2,000 years ago. And we began to unpack this and helping men and women understand this because they get on what we call the crazy cycle. When a wife feels unloved, she reacts in a way that feels disrespectful to her husband. When a husband feels disrespected, he reacts in a way that feels unloving. And they spin on this crazy cycle. And though we all need love and respect equally, we've asked 7,000 people this question. When you're in a conflict with your spouse, do you feel unloved at that moment or disrespected? Randy, 83% of the men said they feel disrespected. 72% of the women say they feel unloved. So the felt need during the same conflict is as different as pink is from blue, though we all need love and respect equally, and she needs R-E-S-P-E-C-T, and he needs love. At the end of the day, she'll say, how can you treat me disrespectfully and say you love me? Whereas most men are assured of a woman's love, so he doesn't doubt her love unless she says, I don't love you. What he thinks is she doesn't like him. So that was the marriage message. But then we got involved in Scripture as to what God says to parents about parenting and what he says to children about how they're to relate with mom and dad. And I realized the Ten Commandments, honor father and mother. Jesus quotes it in Matthew 15, honor father and mother. Paul quotes that in Ephesians 6, honor father and mother. And I realized parents need to be honored. They need to feel respected. This is a need that parents have. And in this book, we talk about that. Rather than dismissing that as narcissistic or egotistical, we're saying that's a legitimate need, and we must not be ashamed of that, and we will feel disrespected from our children. The question is, how do we deal with that moment? Mm-hmm. And what we're doing is validating that emotion, because it is a true need, not just an egotistical thing in most cases among the good-willed. But the real question is, what do I do then when I feel my children are being rude, they're ignoring me, they're disregarding me, I'm feeling disrespected, I'm feeling even offended? How do I deal with that moment? And that's what we're unpacking in this book.
Let me ask you about, and I know this works in both the family and the marriage, but when you say respect, mm-hmm. you listed a lot of negative things there.
Yes.
That women don't want to give in to.
Correct.
And most of those, we would agree, women shouldn't, you know, give in to. We don't think they should be doormats.
But right, exactly.
What do you mean by respect?
Good question. And that's a question that women ask. They say, you know, I have no idea what you're talking about when you talk about respect. I said, do you know what disrespect is? Oh, yeah, I got that down. And they'll say, but it's an attitude. The University of Washington, again, discovered that when a woman is upset, her eyes darken, her face turns sour, hand on the hip, scolding finger, the sigh, the roll in the eyes, and the head goes back. And when estrogen kicks in, the word choice of disrespect and contempt is incredible. So what we ask a woman to do is soften that. It's more about your demeanor. And it's not about him deserving the respect. It's about respectfully confronting those things that are unacceptable. Women don't understand that how they come across, and we say in that case with that sour face and so on and so forth, is there any person in his life who talks to him that way? And if the answer to that is no, then he's not hearing your heart. He's feeling you're using this topic as an opportunity to send him a message that you don't like who he is.
Is it good at that point for the man to say that what I've said? You're not my mother?
I have one mother. I don't need another.
Right, right, because it can feel that way.
Yes,
especially
yes.
For those of us who have children, we see how she treats the children in that motherly way.
Yes,
that
yes.
can be the hand on the hip kind
that's
of
right,
thing.
That's right.
And when that turns on the man, you're like, well, I'm, you know.
That's right.
Is that the kind of feeling? Is that the kind of vibe?
Yeah. I mean, we feel that she's mothering us, and that feels disrespectful to
right.
us. And the key, of course, is for us to realize she's trying to do the loving thing. She's not really trying to be disrespectful. That's why that crazy cycle says, without love, she reacts without respect. Without respect, he reacts without love. Her ultimate thing is to help us understand she's perhaps feeling unloved, and she's definitely trying to do the loving thing. But what happens is we feel she's being disrespectful.
Right,
and
right.
So then we tell her that, and she feels even more unloved. So women know they're right at four levels. He was unloving in the first place. I tried to move toward him to do the loving thing, to talk. While we're doing that, he tells me I'm disrespectful, and I feel even more unloved. And so when they get together with each other, they all have the same experience, and so they're absolutely convinced they're right. So if they're right, he's got to be wrong.
Sure.
And I make the point that he's not wrong. He's just different. Because you can pick up the same thing. He feels disrespected. He seeks to do the respectful thing, usually by withdrawing and calming himself down. In our world, that's the
right.
honorable thing to
that's
do.
That's right.
Only to hear that we're the most unloving human being on the planet, mm-hmm. and we feel even more disrespected. So we know we're right, and therefore, if we are, she's got to be wrong.
And our buddies will confirm that all day
that's
long.
That's exactly right. So what we have to do as mature people, unless there's an intrinsic evil, that he's beating up the kids or
right.
something, that most of these are conflicts over preference differences. We're just looking at an event, an issue, differently. And what we have to do is realize, because I'm right, does not mean that my spouse is wrong. They're just different. And if we begin to pass judgment on the other, mm-hmm. most women move toward the husband to criticize and complain because she's trying to do the caring, loving thing. But in a man's
she's
world, that feels disrespectful. Exactly. But the University of Washington found ongoing criticism feels like contempt to a man.
Nagging.
On the other side, when men withdraw, and 85% of those who withdraw in Stonewall is the male, the women were asked, what do you feel when he does that? And they said, it feels like an act of hostility. Because she couldn't imagine doing that in response to what she perceives to be a minor criticism. But you and I do that, and they found that when we're at that point of conflict, our heartbeats get to 99 beats per minute. We're in warrior mode.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the honorable thing to disengage. If you and I were best of buddies since
yep.
boyhood, we would disengage, drop it, forget. It's no big deal. Our relationship is more important than this issue.
Right.
And so the honorable thing is to disengage.
Wow, does that point out the differences in men and women? That is very good stuff. I love what some of the content he said. He went very fast. Again, there's two books, Love and Respect in Marriage. Now he's written this book called Love and Respect in Marriage and Family. So, I mean, the same thing about love and respect has to do with your children and raising them and what you expect. You expect your kids to be respectful and to honor your commands and your wishes and your desires for them, and yet they don't, you know, particularly, I guess, as teenagers. But even as little kids, I know that that happens, obviously, too. You know, 72% unloved women feel in a marriage, 83% of men feel disrespected, and they say it's all about attitude. Here's some more with Dr. Emerson Egret, again, about male and female relationship. He talks about pink and blue sunglasses. Good analogy. Listen in.
With us this week from Grand Rapids, Michigan, Dr. Emerson Egerich is a former pastor. He's steeped in theology, communication, and family-related studies. And we have so much to unpack. Now, maybe you can identify with that moment. That I do is a woo-hoo. But too quickly for some, it becomes boo-hoo. And the statistics tell us that is true, Dr. Egerich. This little prop has a double meaning because there is, interestingly, pink and blue here. Mm-hmm. That has become kind of a standard that you bear
in
helping couples.
Well, Jesus said, have you not read, he who made them from the beginning made them male and female. And God made us male and female. And I like the fact that she looks through pink sunglasses and it colors what she sees. She wears pink hearing aids and it affects what she hears. She speaks through a pink megaphone and she expects her husband to know what she means by what she says because all of her girlfriends do. He, on the other hand, wears blue sunglasses. It colors what he sees. He wears blue hearing aids and it affects what he hears. He wears or he speaks through this blue megaphone and expects his wife to understand what he means by what he says because all of his buddies know what he means. And so what you have is this male and female pink and blue difference. And so and here's an innocent illustration. She says, I have nothing to wear. What she means is she has nothing new. He says, I have nothing to wear. What he means is he has nothing clean. And so
speaking
we say the
two
same
different
word,
mother tongues.
Exactly. Same words. I have nothing to wear. I have nothing to wear. But we mean something different from what we say. And as I point out, that's an innocent illustration. But as we get into intimacy with another person, suddenly we're trying to figure out, what are you really saying here? Particularly if she filters things through the love grid, and he's not trying to be unloving, but she feels unloved, or she ends up appearing disrespectful. She's not trying to be disrespectful, but he feels disrespected. So now who's right? And these are moments where we're trying to interpret, you know, each other, and that's where we said before that we get into this dance and we end up stepping on each other's toes.
We are going to be meeting your beautiful daughter before this week is out. Joy is here as well. And I just chuckled at her first reaction to you even using stereotypical pink and blue. And you made another beautiful point about those colors and their significance in what God has called us to be in marriage.
Yes. Well, there are a couple of things. One, the pink is very precious to us because my wife, Sarah, had a double mastectomy. So the pink ribbon that universally now displays the whole issue of cancer and for women, that's a powerful, powerful visual. But when you put pink and blue together, it's purple. And if God made us male and female, husband and wife, to come together to reflect His image, He made us in His image, husband and wife. And so husband and wife coming together reflect the image of God. So when you put pink and blue together, it's purple, the color of royalty, the color of God. Husband and wife together reflect His image, His nature. God's not pink in that sense. God's not blue. God's purple. And together we reflect Him. That's why it's a powerful illustration in that regard. Neither one of us are wrong. We're just different.
We just have to figure out how to make this work. I am also deeply touched and impressed at how much of the richness of this ministry has come from brokenness. It is wonderful. We're going to be talking in our next segment about how this principle works in the family, because the family gets on the crazy cycle as well.
Right.
You lived in a crazy cycle.
Yes. Well, and the crazy cycle deals with this Ephesians 5:33 passage where a husband is commanded to love and a wife is commanded to respect. And we've looked at the fact that women have this pushback on the idea of respect, but men are motivated by this issue of honor. And we talk about it in our book. How do you do this when women know how to be disrespectful, they'll say, but I don't really know how to do this respect thing. But people get on the crazy cycle. When a wife feels unloved, she tends to react in that way that feels disrespectful. The University of Washington said her eyes turn dark, the face turns sour, the hand on the hips, the scolding finger, the sigh, the rolling of the eyes, the head goes back. In a man's world, all of these are gestures of contempt. As I say, is there any person in his life that talks to you, to him, the way that you talk to him? And if the answer to that is no, then he's not hearing the deeper cry of your heart. Instead, he's thinking you're using this topic as another opportunity to send him a message. You don't like who he is. He's unacceptable. So what you have then is this crazy cycle. Without love, she reacts in a way that feels disrespectful to him, but she's not trying to be disrespectful. Then when he feels disrespected, he ends up reacting in a way that feels unloving to her. As we point out, men stonewall. 85% of those who just shut down, drop it, forget it. So now,
drop it, forget it. I know I've heard women say, and I got so mad at him, and I was telling him off and all about it. He just looked at me dirty, and then he just walked away right in the middle of my conversation with him. You know, that's just, man alive, this guy is so good. Dr. Emerson Egret's book, Love and Respect, one of the best books out there for marriage. If you can get a hold of that book and share it with your spouse, I mean, things will get better. It's about understanding each other, the differences, the way God made us. He made us different on purpose, you know, but together in unity, we are stronger because God has a purpose and a plan for that. It's like stronger than a double-edged sword, or it's the whole thing about even the rope that's tied together, the three cords are stronger together. God is in the middle of it, and then the man and the woman. God is in the business of loving us through this. Here's a testimony of John and Lisa Nunley that about their marriage being restored. You know, they battled the whole idea of divorce. Very tender story of rebuilding a marriage. I love this. This is good stuff.
We've been married for about 5 years at the time, and we'd been weighing our career options. We ended up going to medical school. We weren't prepared for medical school from a marriage standpoint. I was really busy with medical school the first year. We had two little boys, and I was just really selfish about trying to accomplish my own goals during the first year of medical school. I tended to neglect my wife and my kids during that year of medical school. I remember coming home from My final exam after the first year of medical school is my neuroanatomy exam, and I was so happy to be done with my first year of medical school and have that behind me and enjoy my summer. And the first thing that happened when I walked in the doors, my wife said she'd had it. She was done with the marriage, and she was leaving as soon as she could.
I began packing up, and I didn't intend for that to be our marriage. I wanted a lifelong marriage, and I couldn't take it anymore, so I left. Couldn't do it.
I would say immediately after she said she was leaving, I realized I'd made a mess of my life. I never expected this to happen to me. I never expected to lose my wife and my kids. I was absolutely broken at that point. I got on my knees and I started praying. I started searching the scripture to see what the Lord would say to me. I realized my own selfishness, how I had been living for myself and had been living for Christ. I needed the mind of Christ.
One of the things that he did was he wouldn't leave me alone. I wanted him to leave me alone. I wanted him to just forget about the marriage and just let me go. And he wouldn't let me go. Even though I, you know, didn't live in the same house, I got myself an apartment, got myself a job, and started living for myself. My son, actually both of them, would beg me to go back to their daddy, and that would really make me angry. And I remember calling John and griping at him, saying, how dare you give our children false hope like that? And he said, I have hope for a marriage, in spite of the fact that they're just, you know, in the eyes of the people who were observing what we were going through, they had no hope for our marriage. There seemed to be nothing left in my heart for him, nothing. And
I think what gave me hope throughout the whole marriage was knowing some simple facts that are clearly taught in Scripture, that God is in complete control, that his purposes for us are good. They're always good. That he has a plan for us. One scripture that really stood out is from a little book that I read early on, written by an old pastor, C.H. Spurgeon. And it was based on the scripture from Psalm 50:15 that says, call on me in your day of trouble, and I will deliver you, and you will glorify me. And that really was motivational to me to trust in Christ and the hope that someday he might be glorified through the situation, regardless of the outcome of the situation.
When I made the decision to go back to John, it wasn't because I wanted to be with John. It's because I wanted my children not to come from a broken home. So when I went back to him, I didn't have any hope for the marriage at all. I just thought, well, I'll just be miserable. And we'll just raise our children and I'll deal with it. And I was completely wrong. I think it was, I just kept watching him, and he was so different. And we'd talk, and I just couldn't understand, because I didn't know Christ. I thought I knew him, but I didn't know him personally. I just professed him with my mouth. And so all these things that John was doing, it was this huge testimony to me of something missing in my life. I went into our garage, and I was cleaning it out, and I was listening to this tape that my husband gave me about the holiness of God. And I stopped cleaning, and I literally laid down on the floor of this filthy garage, and I begged God to forgive me.
She begged God to forgive her. God changed her life. Sorry we had to cut that off, but we got to head out of here. Again, about a marriage restored, that is a powerful testimony. Email us at Inspiration316, John Beaner. Glad to have you with us. We'll be back again tomorrow. Exciting stuff again tomorrow. God bless you.
Thanks for listening to the Inspiration 316 Show with John Beaner. Join us each weekday at the same time. If you want to share your testimony, listen to past shows, or get a free book,
visit us at our website, www.inspiration316.com.